Sustain 267.
Welcome to the Sustain 267 podcast, where we host conversations on climate change and sustainability in Africa. In this episode, we bring you the third episode of the Climate Talk series, and I am your host, Bato Gilisite, and I'll be co-hosting with Jeremy. Hi again, Jeremy.
Hey everyone, good evening, good afternoon.
Sustain 267 podcast in partnership with the Global Shapers Community Climate and Environment Steering Committee, Sub-Saharan Africa, which is made up of the global lead Kamal, regional leads Gerald, Jeremy, and myself for Southern Africa, joined by hubs Abuja, Accra, Durban, Gaborone, Nairobi, Lagos, and Victoria, are proud to host the Climate Talk series. This is a six-month webinar series aimed at fostering knowledge and sharing on challenges and solutions to climate change and environmental issues through the lens of Africans and some of the Shaper projects. Through this, we'll be looking to encourage collaborations across the continent among people addressing environmental issues and regional and continental initiatives. In today's conversation, we'll be unpacking measuring the impact of climate and sustainability projects in Africa with our panelists, who Jeremy will introduce shortly. So, as we know, we host events, we host projects, we do mini projects, we host webinars, and some of our businesses even are aimed at climate change and sustainability in Africa. But how do we ensure and prove that they're having the desired effects and results? That's what will be in today's conversation. Now handing over to Jeremy to introduce our panelists for today.
Thank you so much, Bato. You always did it in such great style. So I've got the great pleasure to start off with our panelists today, and then we'll go into our questions. So first off, we have Lerato Modige. She is a Botswanan born in South Africa and raised in Botswana. She's a radio personality and has been on radio for over 4 years. Her journey began on weekend radio and has blossomed to who she is today. She's passionate about the entertainment industry, not only because of a radio, but because also as a female DJ. Recently, as part of the Global Shapers community, Lerato is head of the communications within the Gaborone Hub. She's also co-lead on the cleanup campaign that the Gaborone Hub manages. Currently, Lerato holds a bachelor's degree in media studies and recently launched a cleaning company. Next up, we have Abdouali Motela. He's a reporter from the Humngade Media. He writes on climate and human security trends in Nigeria and Lake Chad. Motela is a climate reality leader trained by former US Vice President Al Gore. He's also a global shaper with the Abuja Hub and serves as the climate and environment chair and leads on the Hub's tree planting project of planting 5,000 trees in Nigeria's capital. He's also founder of the Goro Initiative, a nonprofit for promoting understanding of climate, peace, and security in Africa. Next up, we have Sebel Samuel. She's an Ethiopian-Canadian geographer and a climate justice advocate. She's a co-founder and organizer of Menegede Lesu. Sorry guys if I'm pronouncing wrong. Ethiopia's Open Street Movement. An SLO CAT young leader in sustainable transport and one of Tumi's remarkable women in transport 2020. Her experience in East Africa, Latin America, and Canada, working with international institutions and civil society organizations on climate justice, multimedia communications, and socio-ecological resilience. She's based in Addis Ababa and currently works with the CIGAR research program on climate change, agriculture, and food security. She's a sustainability and environment lead for the Global Shapers Addis Ababa Hub and co-leads campaign on banning single-use plastics. And I think some of you who might have turned in earlier, you can definitely follow up more on this as we share the details. She's a mentor for the Africa Inaugural Women's for Climate Mentorship Program in Addis Ababa, and she holds a Bachelor of Arts in Geography and Anthropology from McGill University and a master's in environmental change and management from the University of Oxford. So a very well welcome to you all.
Thank you for that, Jeremy. Before we begin today's conversation, some of our Nigerian counterparts will be joining us a bit late because they're having a meeting around the End SARS movement. So I would like us as well to take a minute to honor the End SARS movement. This is where Nigerian youth are calling to the end of the Special Anti-Robbery Squad, which is a controversial police unit that attacks, extorts, and kills Nigerian youth. There were nationwide protests when it started, and those then grew to be global protests, and they were protesting against police brutality. To keep updated with the activities, please follow the hashtag #EndSARS. So this is on any social media, and use it to amplify the voices of our Nigerian brothers and sisters. Thank you to the youth of Nigeria for reminding us of the power that we yield as youth, and may the lives that have been lost rest in peace. We shall take a minute to observe and reflect on their untimely passing and the time that our Nigerian counterparts are going through.
Thank you so much, Patu, for that. And thank you, everybody, for observing that moment. In thinking about these times and in thinking about the greater continent and all the different challenges we face, all the different situations we have to deal with, this program really talks about our context, our lives, and our projects in that sense. So the first question that I want to go on, and it's not, you know, it's not disconnected from what we were thinking about here. But when we're thinking about projects in Africa in general, we've got various issues, we've got various things we have to contend with at the same time. So my first question, and we can go around with Lerato starting, then Abdou Ali, and then ending with Sebel. First question up, how are global shapers in Africa creating an impact in climate and sustainability? What are you guys doing to really show that this tremendous or effective impact in your communities, in your countries, and maybe in the continent itself? Thank you.
Thank you so much for the question, Jeremy, and hi, everyone. Well, in our hub, Khadweshe's Khaburone Hub, what we've done and really focused on, and what you touched a bit about in being a co-leader of, is something called the Cleanup Campaign. It's really focused on small communities in and around Khaburone. So what me and my other fellow hub members who are attending as well in the webinar is that we go and select different kind of communities, and we talk to, we try and pair up with something called Village Developed Community, which is VDC, and we try and educate on cleaning up their surroundings, and we go about that by really spending the day with them and really interacting with them, and while we're picking up litter, trying to find out what are some of the ways that they're trying to get their community to be very clean, as well as what are some of the challenges that they face on a day-to-day, either with litter around, with how the community treats litter, and how they interact with such problems in their community. And from there, we then try and see how we can bridge that kind of gap. And even if we aren't able to not always bridge the gap, the fact that we were there has sort of a personal impact. We've seen ways where members of the community pledge to not litter, to try and combat ways of keeping the environment clean. So that's what we do currently on the Khaburone Hub.
Oh, thank you, Jeremy, for the introduction. For Abuja Global Shapers, What we have been doing over the past few months is to plant 5,000 trees. That was our initial target. What we have surpassed that, we've planted 5,360 trees. We started in April with a call out to applicants who had the. So what we did was to ensure that our project was localized. So we made use of partners that were youth-based and also connect with the community, because we are planting trees to fulfill our climate change action, and also to complement the government's climate change commitments to reduce mitigation and also improve resilience. But we are also solving localized problems. And so that's why we had to target our community groups and especially young groups. And so we planted trees in both urban areas and rural areas. In rural areas, the idea was different. In some communities, we planted economic trees to provide nutritious supplements for families, to also provide extra income. So we give them cashew, mango, oranges. And so these rural communities, when these trees grow up, they get to sell the fruits and make income, or they use it in the household. And then thirdly, we also, in the sense that there's a lot of issues that comes around land degradation. When land degradation is one of the significant contributing factor to conflicts in this part of the world, either due to runoff that leads to erosion of the land and other form of land degradation. And so we also planted trees to reduce that. And then thirdly, fourthly, a lot of communities tend to use firewood as their cooking alternative, and this leads to also cutting down trees. And so what we did was, apart from just planting these trees for economic benefit, as a form of environmental peace building, we also try to educate people on the need of planting new trees and protecting existing trees. We understand the dynamics of their community in the sense that they need to use those firewood, but since they don't have an alternative for now, then they need to also plant new trees, while also with dialogue about them. When they can, they should use alternative. So we also planted trees in urban areas, trying to promote green spaces in urban areas. The temperature is rising. About 2 years ago, there was a massive heat wave that led to a lot of health implication. And especially in Nigeria, people cut down trees in urban areas to get more space for buildings, but they do not understand the importance of these green spaces to regulate the temperature and all that. And so we planted trees in urban areas to improve shading and also help in regulating the temperature, and also to serve as an inspiration to other people, because we believe that as we are planting these trees, people get to see it and then also educate them. This is why we are planting the trees, and also inspire them to plant their own trees. So we planted trees in areas where they had erosion, to also stop erosion from destroying the land, especially in schools. And so it was multi-sectoral benefit, our tree planting campaign. I also engaged in climate and environmental education sessions, both offline and online. And one of it was about COVID and climate change. How do they relate? So for us, the COVID was a challenge, but also a blessing, in the sense that it helped us to diverse new approaches to our tree planting. And that's why we're able to plant these trees within the last few months, despite COVID. And secondly, we also use the fact that, okay, let's tell people the fact that the more that we do not address issues around climate change, the more we'll be having another form of COVID will have serious impact on the earth. Because especially our forest areas, our green areas, the stubborn barrier between humans and a lot of genetic diseases. And so we adjust by chance we could have another form of COVID that will have serious impact on it. And so we need to protect our biodiversity. We need to also invest more in terms of our climate change commitment. And so yeah, this is what we have done in the past few months to ensure that we have planted these trees and also put in place mechanisms for the maintenance of these trees to ensure that they address localized problems. And so and this is what we have done.
Excellent. I will pass on to Sebel right now, just in the sense, and I think because we are going to go through quite a few questions, so I'm just going to ask us all to more or less keep it to about 2 to 3 minutes. And I think we're covering a lot of ground. So I appreciate your intervention there, Abdulhadi. But just for us to capture everybody, I think we're going to try and keep us to about 3 minutes. You have the floor.
Thank you, everyone, for having me. Yeah, I'm from the Addis Ababa Hub. So since I've joined, we've been working collectively in the campaign and also with different partners on a plastics ban campaign for Ethiopia. We launched the campaign or the online petition in June of 2019 during World Environment Day, and there was a big event called Startup Ethiopia, Innovate Ethiopia. So we launched there and we invited different pioneers of Ethiopia's environmental movement. So this included different initiatives that are happening on the ground, such as Noble Cup. They create reusable menstrual cups for Ethiopians. The architecture campus of Addis Ababa University, they have a composting program for the entire architecture campus. Hopeful River Project, which works on river rehabilitation in Addis. Techie Bags, which creates plastic alternatives. They have paper bags. Mengad Leso, which is Mean Streets for People in Amharic, and it's the car-free or open streets movement of Ethiopia, and also Zoma Museum. They have a really impressive urban agriculture museum in the city. So we launched this plastics ban campaign then, and the digital campaign we launched last week. It's called Yazambil Mals, which means we're bringing Zambil back. Zambil is a traditional woven basket that people would take to market before the onset of plastics. So we're trying to really celebrate the traditional alternatives that we have in Ethiopia. I can speak more about it after, but we're using kind of different approaches to plug into this campaign from mass media, policy advocacy, alternative business models, plastic-free guides to really promote all the alternatives that make plastic obsolete.
Thank you so much for sharing your projects. You guys are really doing amazing things. And I think what I enjoy about that is it's such a wide spectrum. Lerato with the cleanup project, where it's a more of a community-based project right up to Sable. Is it Sable or Sable? Sorry.
Neither. It's Seble.
Seble. Sorry.
There we go. That's okay.
Got it. Okay. Right up to the project from Addis, as Seble shared, that's more continental as the continent is trying to move towards a plastic-free environment. But before we get even deeper into the conversation, today we're focusing on measuring impact. Why do we need to measure impact? I think sometimes we take the why for granted. We'll think, no, of course we need to measure impact, but why do we need to measure impact? Sebla, do you want to go first, and then Abdullahi, you can go after?
Sure. I can share for the example with our campaign in Ethiopia. I think some of these campaigns can seem frivolous or niche if they're not communicated properly, kind of the impact that they have beyond purely the environmental sector. So obviously the onset of plastic displaces a lot of other economic opportunities, such as zambils or these cloth bags. So it's important to measure kind of what have been the job losses in more traditional fields with the onset of these plastics is one thing, but also the way that we manage our waste. We don't have proper waste management systems. So a lot of the time how we deal with plastic waste is by burning it. Yeah, it's not really, there's not been significant study into what are the health impacts, although we know that they are quite negative of the health impacts of burning plastics, having them these be beside homes, and what happens with our respiratory tracts, all these things. Also on the larger scale of waste to landfill, the methane that's put out, the greenhouse gases that come from this. Also, we've had terrible landslides in our country from landfills that have, you know, taken the lives of many people who live along these sites. So I think there's so many different ways that you can kind of show the benefits of doing a campaign like this, but you need to measure the impact beyond just purely the environmental sector, because that speaks to people who don't necessarily fit in your environmental niche or believe already see with the same clarity that you do on this need to ban plastics. But you know, and there's so many other ways you can approach it. As you know, this is a way for big oil and fossil fuels to proliferate, because everyone's trying to get off of fossil fuels. So they're trying to say, okay, let's revive plastics now. Let's make everything be plastic so we don't fall out as an industry. So I think it's really important to measure all these different aspects, because that will speak to every, that's I think how you mobilize a stronger movement, more coalitions, is that you take kind of different aspects from a lot of different sectors and measure how this campaign can impact all of them.
Definitely looking at involving as many voices as you can so it resonates with more people. As you were saying that, I remembered something that I heard a few weeks ago on another webinar where someone said climate change is not only an environmental problem, which speaks to what you're saying about the whole intersectionality thing. Abdullahi, would you like to weigh in on why we need to measure impact?
All right, thank you, Basu. Yeah, when actually measuring impact to what guys does in terms of product investment and when how has our project or our intervention made a difference? Have we solved the problem or have we made the problem worse? And so I'm going to use tree planting as an example. So you're planting a tree in a community. When you measure, you find out, have you made the lives of the people in that community better? Have you made the ecosystem better? So if you introduced trees that are alien to the environment, foreign trees, then they tend to have effect on both the insect population and so many other things. And then you end up adding more problem. In the 60s, and pre-colonial era, the colonial government introduced some species of trees from abroad into Nigeria to as part of the efforts to address deforestation. And that ended up actually causing more problem because some of these tree species had were actually draining more water from the soil, while some of them again were served as fuel whenever because of this slash and burn technique of farming. And so these trees just burn like a fuel, and they were new trees that were introduced. So generally you have to measure what is the impact of the trees you're planting in terms of economic development of the community, what is the environment impact. And so if the impact is great, it means that more investment can be made in that environment. And also the studies that you get, the data and the data that will mean both in terms of scientific data and also data from the people in terms of how they relate to the project helps you to shape further investment, probably not just in that community, but in other communities. So it's super important to measure the impact of the project. Just the same way whenever you're doing large scale in terms of environmental impact assessment, whenever you're doing any other project. So it helps you to really shape in terms of both project designing and also project implementation and also scaling up of a project.
Yeah, when you actually say that, I think that's something that going into this conversation, I hadn't thought about that. Sometimes the projects that we put on trying to save to solve a problem, they end up actually having the opposite effect. So definitely impact, measuring impact becomes quite important there. Lerato, would you like to add anything to anything that to what's been said so far?
Most definitely, I think also a reason why it's very important to measure impact is in education. I am on a better privileged platform in the sense of other than just radio, I'm also a part of Global Shapers, and we do, like you were saying, a more community-based project with the cleanup campaign. And it's all great and well to be talking about climate change when back home, no one really understands what exactly climate change is. But if I come to your home directly to you, and then I pick up litter with you, and I'm interacting with you, and I'm having conversations with you, and I'm understanding why you feel the need to just throw away a straw, and you don't think just one piece of straw could actually lead to a more bigger impact. So those are some of the things that really, that's how you gauge impact. That's how you change behavioral change, because that on its own, when you start from home, it becomes a larger impact in a sense of it starts from one person realizing why I need to stop throwing away cans, or I need to stop using plastic, or I need to mobilize and add my voice into the cleanup campaign or a climate talk series, just like we're having now.
I agree with you there. Sorry, I lost my train of thought. Can I hand over to Jeremy?
Yeah, I mean, there's plenty to go back and forth in these last questions and these answers. So I'm really appreciating when you're talking about education, when we're talking about scaling up, when we're talking about, you know, really addressing some of, you know, when we think about these large issues, you know, if we think about big oil going into plastics, these things seem impossible. But if we're really measuring our impact, if we're really chipping away, like immediately think about what Abdulhadi was saying in terms of, you know, they had aimed for 5,000 and it got to 5,300, right? You know if you're succeeding, you know if it's scalable, you know if it's working, you know if it's basically getting you to a place that you should be. And sometimes you really need that, not only for yourselves, but for your funders, for your community, to bring people along, to make them understand the scale of the problem, but the scale of the solution as well. We need some hope, or we need sometimes reality. And I think that's what impact, or measuring impact, really talks to. And I mean, everybody on this call as panelists, as shapers, and you know, it's one thing we have to think about is that we have impact officers. Some people in the group we have right now might be impact officers themselves. So, you know, the next question really goes into how is your hub contributing to the global shapers, the community's climate and environment impacts? Obviously, we have circular economy, we have on the trillionaire, we have these various impact areas. And I'm interested, obviously you guys are touching on this, but how do we bring these things so that the whole community knows about it? And are we know we're actually, you know, I think it's about, we're expecting 1 million actions from shapers around the world. We have 12,000 shapers, and we're expecting 1 million actions when it comes to environment and climate action. So maybe we can start with Lerato this time, and then work our way through. Just the question again is, how is your hub contributing to Global Shaper Community's climate and environment impact areas?
Hi, Jeremy. You are disrupting the, on my side, I think it's on a personal load. Can you just repeat the question for me there? Thanks.
Sure, no worries. Essentially, is how is your hub contributing to the Global Shapers Community's climate and environment impact areas?
Okay, on our end, we can start with the fact that number one, we go into, other than just the cleanup campaign, and really we document what we do. Right. And in documenting, that's really important in trying to figure out, first of all, not just measuring that impact, but also seeing in ways where we can improve. And that's how it contributes to the impact of, as Khaburunya Hub, are we moving in the right direction? And also seeing ways in which we can manipulate and also see areas that we lack in. For example, when I started on the cleanup campaign, I was actually not a global shaper. I was just a member, a public a community member, you know, and I got to see global shapers doing this one thing. And I hadn't known about it because at the time, I didn't see any type of documentation or any type of activity social on social media. Not that I had access to it, but I think let's just say ignorance. So with me coming into it and with my background in media, what we have managed to do is sort of up the scale in documentation, sort of up the scale in making it a possible that with whoever we engage with, whoever we're having conversations with, whoever we're trying to rope in, that we're also putting accountability to them to say, number one, you're going to pledge to do this moving forward. This is the kind of impact we're talking about in not just community level, but also industry players, sponsors who are coming on board as well. So that's what we're doing.
Excellent. Yeah, documentation, accountability. I'm definitely following those then. Abdul Ali, you have the floor.
Yeah, hello. Yes, I can hear you now. In terms of how our project, can you repeat the question again, please?
Sure. In the sense of how is your hub contributing to the Global Shaper Community's climate and environment impact areas? Obviously, I mean, yeah, I'll let you interpret from there.
Yeah. So, all right. So in terms of our hub, what we really focus on is to have, despite localizing our project, we having the bigger picture in mind in terms of how do we help fulfill the national commitment, and also in terms of what the Global Shapers Community is doing itself. And so how do we really merge all this together to have a greater picture and also a greater impact in terms of what we're doing, and then also relate with members from other hubs and all, and in terms of sharing our ideas and that. And so in one part is to ensure that there's enough publicity for our project, not just to inspire Nigerians, but to inspire other people across the Shapers community, so that they could see areas where we have adapted to problems, and then they could also emulate such. So it's our own way of transferring the knowledge and skills that we've learned in terms of our own project here in Nigeria. And then the second one is on ensuring that our project is as open as possible. We had to make sure that there's regular update in terms of our project. We had to ensure that there was regular update, optimizing the use of social media to update our project. We have gone, in fact, we started from the moment we reached 100 trees, we've gone 100, 500. So there was this deliberate effort to ensure that we kept everyone updated. And whenever we had challenges, we also shared those challenges and the steps we took to address those challenges. And then one other area that we actually also focus on in terms of climate education and environment education. This was really very important for us because we believe that it really shapes the future of our project, both in terms of the communities and in the hub itself. Because for us, it's a new field for the hub. Getting into climate and environment is a new field for us. This is in fact our first significant climate and environment project. And so we're learning and we're also sharing our knowledge with the world in terms of this is what we have done and this is the challenges we have faced and these are the steps we have taken. And when we do, when we find challenges that we don't have answer, we reach out to people across and to give us those solutions. This is definitely part of the things that we took into consideration.
Excellent. Yeah, I mean, just to say this real-time communication with your community, as Lerato is saying, when you're documenting these things, to have people being brought about, I've definitely seen this being a way to get people who are not shapers on board, or get other shapers on board, get other people on board. So I'm just picking on that quite a bit. Seble?
Yeah, I can share a bit about the context in Ethiopia. So over a decade ago, there was a proclamation on solid waste management that was put out that banned single-use plastics that were really small, 0.03 millimeters in width. This was never implemented in practice, and so they're still all over the country, particularly in the cities. And then in January of this year, the Environment, Forest and Climate Change Commission put forth a bill to Parliament to ban commercial and shopping bags in the country, plastic bags. So a lot of the work part of the work with the campaign is around pushing for this policy change, accelerating the policy change and pushing for the policy advocacy, because not all stakeholders involved are aware of this imminent change and what it would mean for their industries, et cetera. But I think I want to caution also away from this focus on individual change, because I think that is kind of a way that a lot of fossil fuel industry makes, shifts blame or shifts where the change can happen. Like fundamentally, we need systemic change. We have 10 years that we're supposed to radically reduce the amount of emissions across the entire world. So like, yes, it's nice if we switch to reusable bags, cut out plastics completely, but there has to be some sort of, you know, large scale change. So obviously the individual and collective actions are important, but I think in the campaign, we're trying to push for this policy advocacy just as much as we're trying to push for the collective behavior change, because across the African continent, it's around 3 or 4% of all global carbon emissions. So we need to have that in mind when we're also coming from a context where there are really sustainable lifestyles. And we have to also be cognizant of the fact that, for example, with plastics, there's a whole trade industry. Now China has said, we don't want to receive, you know, plastic waste from rich countries who don't want to, you know, manage their own waste. So it's coming to us now. And I think these are things that we have to think about is how is, you know, global power structures at play with this whole issue of sustainability. There's so much economic power structure involved. So I think for our campaign, that's why we're taking so many different approaches to it. We're trying to do a digital campaign and mass media to kind of reach people, use it as a kind of collective public education tool, show alternatives that exist and support them as livelihood means. And then, as I was saying, this piece on policy advocacy, it needs to be legislated and people need to have alternatives when that happens.
I definitely agree with you, Sirble. It needs to be, we need small impact and we need big impact. So in as much as we need to address the countries that are getting rid of the plastics and the communities that are using the plastic, that what you said just now on plastics now being brought to Africa reminds me that currently I think there's a somewhat of a trade tension where America is trying to bring plastic to Kenya and Kenya is refusing it because they've got a plastic ban in place. Something definitely worth looking up if anyone on the call would like to know more about it. We're going to have a Q&A session towards the end. So in the meantime, you can post your questions in the Q&A section. And then the next thing that I wanted us to look at is, are some impacts easier to make and measure as compared to others? We have spoken of impact at community level, at policy level, at global level. Are some easier to make? Are some easier to mobilize on? Are some easier to reflect on how far they've come? Abdullahi, do you want to go first?
Hello. Yeah, thank you for that question. It's quite an interesting one in the sense that some impact areas are easier to measure than others. I feel the impact areas around communities are much more easier to measure when you're able to win the hearts and minds of the community and ensure that your means of engagement is as indigenous as possible. Basic things like your mode of dressing, you're talking with them, you get to really hear a lot from the communities, and also you get to learn a lot because it's a two-way thing. A lot of times these communities tend to also have solutions for us because they tend to live as sustainable as possible. They have very limited impact on the environment, and so we also learn from them. They have knowledge of trees that have been useful for them for centuries, and we learn that. We also learn basic things like building techniques and other things, and so we learn from the communities as doing this conversation. But difficult one is in terms of the policy side, and so we have seen even though politicians talk about climate change a lot, the impact of climate change a lot, we're not really seeing that commitment to climate change. If they have $1 billion to spend, they will spend it more on fossil fuel than investing in renewable energy research and development and all that. And so in 2019, I visited a state known as Katsina, Northwest Nigeria, and that's where we have our first wind park. Massive land, lots of billions of naira invested, but that project has remained stagnant and it has not been completed for decades now, despite the enormous benefit of the project in terms of, because it's the biggest in terms of our own renewable energy efforts in Nigeria. But we are investing more in finding fossil fuel, even in areas that are difficult in the Lake Chad and are very hostile. We are investing in reactivating our refineries, but we are not really investing in the jobs of the future and the future green economy, which is the wind power, and in fact of its own benefit on our economy. So in terms of the policymakers, it's really difficult to know how your engagement with them has really changed their view. I'd really see climate change as an opportunity or just a cost to them, because it means investing money that they would have invested in other areas. But do they have the long-term view? Because a lot of politicians just want to see the impact now, so that they appreciate, sure, we have done this. This is what we have done. We deserve another term. But are they really patient enough to look at the longer picture? And this is what climate action is about, really. And also investment in the emerging and the future green economies, about waiting, about patience, about hope. It's about positive energy. And are they really that? So it's really difficult in terms of the policy side, but in terms of the community, it's easier to really get the feedback and know your impact.
Yeah, I think with the political will thing, it's been a frustration that spreads across a considerable amount of Africa. I remember in our ruling party, I think I've shared this before, in their election manifesto, which was last year, they had 5 sentences on climate change. And then you look at how much climate change impacts our lives, and it's a bit shocking that we're not seeing more political will on that front. But I guess the beauty of what you've just said, Abdullahi, on engaging communities is that politicians respond to, they want votes, so they respond to what the community demands. So maybe that could be a way of getting to the political will through the community. Lerato, would you like to weigh in on where it's easier to create impact?
Where it's easier to create impact. Okay. For me, in my experience, is that where it's easier to create impact is really on a community level. It's been more easier to be able to communicate with people face to face as opposed to, for example, there are certain campaigns, and yes, it may be on a global scale or more on a, let's say, political scale. And in as much as it's all nice and well to see these big campaigns and which are doing so well, sometimes it doesn't necessarily communicate to the community directly. So it's much more easier, in my experience, to have a more community interaction, because then I can then come back and see how things are. We've had instances where in certain places like Old Naledi, where it's more cleaner and the community in general takes up after themselves. They are not well off, a well off community, but in as much as with their challenges, they still find ways in which they can keep their community clean. So things like this, I think it's much more easier to sort of gauge the impact whenever we're having such projects as global shapers. So I think more especially with the bigger projects or with the bigger global projects, I think it's somewhere there's a bit of a gap there that they can fill. How do I then communicate as a sponsor to somebody who's at home and sitting and watching a billboard that says, keep your country clean or keep this clean?
Definitely. The running message here definitely seems to be community engagement, maybe as an entry point, seeing as that's where we found that it's easiest to create impact. So Blair, would you like to share, has your experience been any different in terms of creating impact?
Well, I was thinking in terms of measuring impact, I think what can be easier to measure is sort of the broad strokes in terms of, okay, has there been policy implementation? Has there not? Which industries or which supermarkets or which hotels have decided to ban or not ban this product? Inventories on, okay, how many alternatives are in place now? I think those things are more straightforward to track. I think some of the messier, more slippery things to measure can be around the areas where we don't have proper baselines. So if there's not, for example, areas with proper waste management information, for example, we don't know, in Addis, for example, the waste collection system is very organic, I would say. And this, we don't have these formalized systems that, you know, pick up, transport, deliver, etc. So that can be harder to track. Okay, measuring everyone who's involved in that value chain and how would they be displaced from income or livelihood if this was to take place, and how can they be kind of reoriented into a circular economy model? How much waste is currently going to landfills? What is the, you know, emissions from that? Those things I think are a lot harder to measure at present, just because they can be informal sectors. So I think informality, yeah, is harder to measure. It depends what baselines you have, what indicators you have. If a certain product is banned, then how do people's behavior change because of that? I think so. Those areas, I think, can be more difficult to track than the simple, did this happen? Did it not? Is the policy in place? What is this place producing instead? What's the alternative? Those can be more straightforward compared to the informal measures I mentioned that are equally important and substantial in the context we're speaking of. Yeah.
Definitely. It needs a system. With measuring, you need a system, some simpler systems, some you need a system that's a bit more complicated. And then now that we've moved to monitoring and evaluation, with the projects that you've done as a hub, are you able to effectively monitor and evaluate the impact that your projects have had on your community. So right now we have spoken of, Abdullahi touched on, there's a potential of their projects having fruit trees and people eating them and selling, Larato, the cleanup campaign. But have you been able, within the projects that you've done, been able to monitor and evaluate your projects? Larato?
It's yes and no. Yes, in a sense of we will come and we'll do a post cleanup where we're not necessarily cleaning up, we're just looking around the area and seeing how people are interacting in their community. No, in a sense of in as much as we are there for the day, it's not always the case where there's an instant behavioral change in the community. Yes, they will come and they're excited because there are more people coming into their community and they want to engage with us and clean up with us. But sometimes it's hard to really measure the success of it immediately. Sometimes there's a bit of a block there where we see and identify the gaps within the community. But when you have to try and upscale it to where the powers that be to try and implement certain changes there, like, for example, bringing dustbins for the community, bringing something that you can put publicly, it's not always the case where it happens instantly. It takes over time. So that's why I'm saying it's a bit of a yes or no situation. Yes, we are able to have access to their communities anytime that we want and be able to really put them to task and say, on this day, you pledged that you will do this. Are you keeping up with it? But no, in a sense of sometimes it's really hard to gauge.
Yeah, I get what you mean. In terms of the monitoring, maybe the evaluation at one stage might be easier to do, but the monitoring thereafter could be a bit of a challenge.
Exactly.
Yeah. Osebla, would you like to chip in there on how you are able to effectively monitor and evaluate the impact of your projects? That's if you are able to.
Yeah, there's different components that we have for the project. So for example, in June 2019 is when we launched the online petition, which I've put the Instagram and Facebook pages for our campaign, Yazambil Mals, in the chat. So since we've launched the online petition in June 2019, we have over 10,000 signatures. Of course, because this is an online platform, it's quite easy to measure that. but other components of it were just launching recently. So for example, we launched the digital campaign a week and a half ago. So we can track kind of the reach of those campaigns, but then we've also been plugging into mass media. So earlier this week, we were featured on one of the national radio stations and TV channels that will air on Sunday. So because these are beginning, and then we have, like I mentioned, we're going to create an alternative kind of plastic-free guide to the city and different business models. So how can we support people without work to be creating zambils, the woven baskets or cloth bags, and then also working on the policy advocacy. So because we're launching these right now, we haven't really set up any structures. It will definitely be important down the line, but right for now, we're concentrating most of our energy on launching these different elements.
And sometimes you need to just get the ball rolling. As long as the ball is rolling, then you'll check how far it's rolled a bit further down the line. Abdullahi, would you like to chip in there?
Yeah, so for us, our project is still we finished the first stage in October. Although we are keeping in touch with our facilitators on the ground, both in terms of people in the community and those the groups in terms of their communication channels and all that, you know, how the tree is doing and everything, what's the maintenance procedure, is that being abided to, because we didn't just plant the trees alone, we had to put in place mechanisms to ensure that trees are protected from animals, the trees are watered and all that, in terms of how to really protect these trees. So we are getting feedback from the communities, and then areas where the trees have been facing problems, therefore insects and all that, we also help our communities to fix that problem. And so generally we have not really had or been able to fully evaluate the impact of our project. It will take little bit of time. And when these trees start to mature, that's when we get to know how many have survived and then how many are now really having an impact on the community. But for now, the impact that we can really measure is the perception of the community, the feedback from the community, how these seen are they on. Because we really went to remote communities, some communities that have never been to really remote communities, and teach them about climate change, about environmental education. And so hearing the feedback, the fact that they're understanding that yes, there's a problem that has really changed your farming season, that is the reason why the rain does not come the way it used to come, and why the way you understand the raining pattern that has been passed around from generation to generation is changing, why you cannot plant when you used to, and all that. So in terms of having this conversation and hearing the feedback, and then, so this is what we can really measure now. Even that, it's just preliminary. It's later on when we really go back to these communities, we understand, yeah, what we discussed with them, has it really stuck with them? Is it making really any difference? Are there young people in the community that have begun to also do things around this area, around environment, sustainability in their own communities, in these places? And so, in fact, one of the things we did also was to name the trees after young kids in this community. So the idea is the kids serve as like they take care of the trees, and also with the assistance from the family. But it starts as a reminder for the young kids to really protect the environment, because this tree is named after you, and so you have this kind of close bond with the trees. And so it's later on that really we be able to evaluate the entire impact of our project, both in terms of community behavior and also the environmental and economic impact of the trees.
This has been an excellent conversation, guys. I just want to say we are getting into the last 10 minutes, and I just want to like just touch on a couple of things. But before I do, I just want to say, you know, when we've started this climate talk series, we also face challenges in monitoring and evaluation. So I think I'm touching on this, and it's as you go, it's iterative, but it's also feedback, right? We're hoping to hear feedback on Facebook through the emails and everything like that. So ourselves, we know when we're doing this climate talk series, we know how many people have turned up. But does it actually generate projects in hubs across the continent? You know, does it help shapers who might not have known about certain things, know about these things and exchange knowledge? So these are things we, as shapers, as people organizing these series, are thinking about for ourselves and this event. So it's really good to like hear about, you know, when we talk about feedback, when we talk about learning by doing. I think that's a key part of this. So wrapping up, and I think we might just get a chance for a question from the chat that I've seen, but just wrapping up, and I want everybody to really spend 1 minute, but give me essentially per person, right? What is one key area to pay attention to when measuring impact? Like, what is the priority for you when you're measuring impact? What area you think is vital? And if we could just get, about 1 minute from each person. If I can start with you, Seble. Thank you.
Okay. I think what I would say is the most important is that local communities and the public in general, they have to want the change that's coming. I think anytime any of these are kind of put down in a top-down manner, that it means that the second the regime changes, it can just be reversed. So it has to be something that it kind of permeates society at large, and there's a lot of education around why it's so vital for different communities, and also within the ministries that are proposing it, be it the Ministry of Environment, whatever. It can't just be the minister or a top official that is understanding that. It needs to permeate the whole ministry, so that if there's turnover, there's still an understanding of why this is important. There's still kind of an institutional memory about how to carry that forward, so that turnover doesn't mean any reversal of the changes that need to come.
Excellent. It's about complete, I would say it's consensus and demand from the people in that sense. Lerato, if you can come in on that.
I definitely agree with Seble. I hope I'm saying her name right. It's really focusing on the stakeholders, the community. There's a saying where you can take the horse to the river, but you can't force it to drink, you know. So things like that, if the community does not want to learn, or not even learn, or rather are ignorant to the fact that we are having this global pandemic, which is climate change and global warming and the such, then it's really difficult for me to come in as global shapers or as a policymaker and say, look, I would like to do this for your community and I'm going to do this and this and this and this and this. And if they say no, without the education, without them wanting it, then no change will happen. We're going to continue having these conversations on webinars and amongst ourselves, and it will be great and well, but it will never come forth and bear fruit if we're not engaging with stakeholders, with the relevant stakeholders.
Yeah, I'm hearing consultation throughout. If you have not consulted your stakeholders, if you've not come to a point where they have the information, they're informed, how do we bring things forward? Excellent. Yeah, building on top of that. Abdul Ali.
So I agree with them, and I will also take it from another angle in terms of behavior. We need to, if we do not see change in behavior of community, behavior of individuals, behavior of politicians, that's really the impact. Are politicians seeing the right things and also doing the right things? Because our politicians like to see a lot of good things, but they don't implement it. So are they saying it and also implementing it? Are communities talking about these? How are they really having their conversation around sustainability and climate action? And so also as individuals, so really we need to see the change in behavior. And that's really one of the major areas to measure impact. And then so also in terms of socioeconomic development, what has been the benefit? For the past 5 years, the past 10 years, what has really changed? We have got new job opportunities, new investment, new revenue generation. And so these are really key areas that we need to impact, because they really make huge difference. If there's an economic impact that is visible, it's going to also shape behavior. If behaviors really are visible, it's also going to shape policies and all that, policies from bottom to top.
Exactly. Start from the bottom and go up. And the community, I agree. I completely agree. Completely agree. Communities need to be brought on. We can bring great solutions, but if communities are not on board, we're wasting everybody's time and, quite frankly, resources. We have 2 minutes. We'll do a quick 2 minute Q&A. There's already a question in from Brown Odeng. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. And they say, apart from cleanup activities, tree plantings, and creating awareness on climate change, what other practices have been done to tackle climate change? So if you could list them, so just give me two, if each panelist could just give me two, or what actions can be done. So your top two. So we'll do Serble, Abdullahi, and then Lorato.
Okay, well, I can just speak from my experience. So obviously we're campaigning to make Ethiopia plastic free. First, we start with the plastic bags, then we get to the bottles, then the whole gamut. That's around the campaign with Yezam Bilmels. I'm also a co-founder of Mangadlaso, which I said at the beginning means streets for people. So prior to the pandemic, every single month in Addis, we'd open up around 15 kilometers of streets to people, close them to motor vehicles, spread to other cities around the country, and was going to go national in March. And the idea is, I think this is common in a lot of African cities, we're not overly reliant on private vehicles to move around. So let's make space for the majority in the way that we plan our cities. And so Mangadlaso is kind of a monthly experience to imagine what our streets can really be once we plan for the majority to move by foot, by bicycle, active forms, also collective transport, all these things. And then I'm also a mentor for Women for Climate, which in Addis Ababa, which is part of C40, and just match a lot of bright-minded women who want this climate to be livable. And so I think just go with whatever motivates you most. I mean, there's so many ways that you can tap into, if that's what the person who asked the question is looking for, whatever most motivates you. I mean, you can honestly do it through any form, through music, through the arts. I think those, through communications, I think those are really powerful ways to motivate people outside of the environmental sphere. So whatever your passion is, you can connect it those ways. The examples that I'm doing is, through this Women for Climate program, through Streets for People, and through which is Mangalaso, and then through Yazambil Mels for Plastic Free Ethiopia. So take it any way you want.
Okay, so see which method best appeals to you and then run with it. Abdullahi, two things.
Well, two things. I will start with myself. Also, I'm a climate and climate conflict reporter, and I also report about climate security. So it's really and another avenue that you get to talk about the impacts of climate change and also solutions that are in place, either the Great Green Wall and so many other things. And so, yeah, it's another area of climate change that's climate conflict and also climate security. And then one other area is really micro-mobility in terms of how we change our transportation system using much more systems that do not emit greenhouse gases from bicycles to scooters and so many other things. In fact, the post-COVID era will be shaped by these micro-mobilities, and also it's a benefit for climate action. The last one is in terms of infrastructure and construction. How are we building our houses? Are we building our houses in a sustainable manner that allows us to adapt to climate change and also reduce our impact on climate change? We need lots of more air conditioners. How do we build our houses with less use of light, more use of sunlight, and less use of air conditioners and all that? So yeah, these are my own other areas.
Lerato, do you want to go ahead? But Abdullahi, I definitely agree with you. Sharing stories is important so we know what's happening, where it's happening, and we can talk about it and do something about it. Lerato, two items. What's your list?
Yes. Wow. I've been listing in that quite a lot, but I'll just take it two. Firstly, that I've really noticed what our country has done is, number one, I spoke about the VDCs, which is Village Development Community, right? They take people who are unemployed and use them really to mobilize things like cleaning up the community. So that's one thing that I really, really believe has really impacted in climate change, especially in the way we take care of litter in Botswana. So that's one thing I must say kudos to them for. So proud. And also just incentives. So the thing that I've noticed as well when doing the cleanup campaign is that there's less cans, less bottles. And this is because they really kept a policy of if you bring a can, if you bring a bottle, we can buy it back for you at a small amount. And with that, in my interaction with people, is that when they have their either, let's say, liquor or whatever preferred drink, juice, whatever, but if it's in a can and if it's in a bottle, they tend to keep that and they tend to have like a bucket and they'll keep it in, even if they're going out for parties. So that's one, those are two things that I would say really could be ways and practices that other countries could look into in engaging, number one, the community as well, and a little incentive never hurt nobody.
Yeah, very true, very true. As we are a bit over time, so I know we're wrapping up now, and we've got two questions in the chat, and this is the last two we're going to take. So thank you very much from our attendees for giving these questions. What I'm going to do is basically ask one of these questions to a particular panelist, and maybe towards the end, if we have a moment, I might open it up to another person, but we'll see how we answer, because we are going to try and keep it very, very short and sweet to just respect everybody's times. So I wanted to take from our second question, what are some of the methods used to measure impact of your projects? So Seble, if I can go for you on this one, right now you have this campaign going on. So if you could give me your most effective method that you think is right now working to measure the impact of your project.
I don't feel I'm the right person to answer that question because we're just launching, but I'm going to change your question to the other one I saw in the chat, which I think fits better. Hope that's fine. Okay, of how we collaborate across hubs to amplify impact, because I think that's something super helpful that we've had Jeremy with the East Africa sustainability leads for the different hubs, because for example, the idea of the plastic-free guides for Addis came from the Nairobi Shapers had done a similar plastic-free guide. So I think if we can cluster around, if we're working on different themes, how can we share that, especially across East Africa? We already have Rwanda, Kenya, Uganda, and now I think Tanzania that already have these plastic bans. So obviously the hubs in these countries can really be helpful in teaching everyone else in the region how they got to this place if they were involved in that campaign. And you've connected me with people who were involved in the plastic bag campaign for Nairobi. So I think if we're clustered in really specific campaigns that we're working on, it can be an amazing way to share ideas and lessons from how they've achieved so much impact. So sorry I answered the other question, but I thought it suited better.
No, that's fair. That's fair enough. I appreciate when everybody is creative enough like this. I think you answered that one question really well, though. I think we do have these climate, these regional leads for this region, these clusters. And I mean, this is exactly what we're trying to do in this space here. Can I put the question then, the first question I asked, can I put that to Abdulhadi then? So what are some of the methods used to measure impact of your project? So in terms of tree planting, I mean, obviously you're counting trees, but as you were saying, in terms of the fruits being picked up, the indigenous knowledge being used, yeah, what would you say the methods you've used to measure that impact?
So basically for us, what we can do now, we just finished a project in October. Part of what we did was to measure count our trees and also follow up 2 weeks, 4 weeks after, know how many trees are surviving, what's happening with the trees, and how many number of trees have died, where have they died, and how do we solve that problem. And so for us, it's part of is measurement and also feedback from the community in terms of our conversation, both in the field and offline, phone conversation, and also when we visit these communities, what was the feedback. So these are the instruments we do have for now. But later on, as the trees grow, we'll be able to measure more things, including the behavior of the communities, including the conversation around climate in the community, and also the impact of the trees. Are there farms that no longer have soil erosion problem because the trees are able to stop the runoff? And are the trees bearing fruit? And what is the impact of the fruits to the community? And this will take a little bit of time.
Excellent, thank you. Lerato, you have a pick of any of these questions if you feel like you need to come in. If you don't feel you want to come in, but I'm definitely giving the chance if you feel you answer one of these questions, if there's anything to add from your side.
I'll just say that in terms of the methods used to measure impact, especially with the cleanup campaign, because it's very targeted towards communities and different communities in and around Gaborone. What we do is then we pick one representative that we then add on to a group. So they essentially become an ambassador for that community. They have to then find ways in which they continue the cleanup campaign without us. Yes, they will do it on the day that we do it, but in their community. So then they rally up people around their own community. So if I'm in a place, let's say, for example, there's where I am in Tlokweng, I have somebody in Old Naledi who I was there before last month, but then is there with new people, and they're then doing their own cleanup campaign, but we're still together, but separate. Yeah.
With that, we wrap up today's session on measuring the impacts of climate change and sustainability projects in Africa. Please follow the Sustain 267 page on Facebook for future events. I've just shared a link in the chat. This is where I say thank you so much to our panelists, Lerato, Abdulhadi, Sebler. Thank you so much for joining us for today's conversations. My co-host, Jeremy, you've been great. Always look forward to this every month. And a huge thank you to those who made this possible, being the Global Shapers Climate and Environment Committee for Sub-Saharan Africa. And the names individually behind these were Murunwa Mafatsa doing our comms, Kelvin Ashi, who is doing our technical right now, Jeremy, the co-host, Chimdi Faith Chinenyewa Okoro Ono, and Babajide Oluwasi. Those are the people who make this possible every single month. Thank you so much for being an awesome team. And last but not least, thank you for taking time, 1 hour and nearly 15 minutes of your time, to join this live stream episode of the Climate Talk series. That brings us to the end. I was the host of today's episode, Babukilisite, alongside Jeremy. And once again, let's remember that the COVID-19 pandemic is still on and lives are being lost. So let's continue to follow regulations and stay alive and stay home where possible. And let's engage with the NSARS hashtag. Good evening, everyone.
Sustain 267.